Hello everyone, and welcome to Historical Hysteria. My name is Nicholas Ward. Today, we are exploring the medieval Norse period known as the Viking Age, and the many, many myths and misconceptions and mysteries around these medieval pirates. But today's episode is going to be a little bit different. Last year, I was experimenting on a collaborative podcast called Two Perceptions. It was a bit of a practical philosophy slash psychology slash history slash everything else podcast. We put a lot of work into it, but in the end, it did have to be shelved. Today's episode was one of our first experimental... Today's episode is going to be one of our first experimental episodes that I really liked. It fits with HH's theme, and I think you, my listeners, will enjoy it. Fair warning, it will be quite different to what you are used to, but hopefully in a good way. Anyway, here it is. Hello and welcome to Two Perceptions. My name is Nicholas Ward and I am joined by my co-host, as always, my good friend, Mr. Jonas, or as we call him, the Penguin. Today, we are exploring the modern myths and misconceptions of Viking culture. This episode is part of a wider series on preconditioned belief and how our upbringing and culture affect our beliefs. Viking, Norse, or Scandinavian culture is a fascinating topic that today is absolutely laden down with myths and misunderstandings. But there is another reason we are talking Vikings and preconditioned beliefs. Because, as some of you may know, Jonas is Danish. No offense, Jonas.
Yeah, okay. I'm born here for sure.
So, Jonas, tell me, how much do you know about the Vikings?
Well, that's a loud question. I have been... I would say I know quite a bit about the Vikings. And like the different myths and sagas within the Viking mythology, but whether it's I might know more than a general Danish person, I suspect. But at the same time, I definitely would say I have a huge gaps here and there. But
well, that's what I'm hoping. You might not be the best person to run myths and misunderstandings by, because yes, we have. In fact, a lot of what I know about Viking and Norse culture comes from you teaching me it, but nevertheless, I'm hoping that I'll find a couple of gaps in your knowledge. So, the first question is, do you know when the Viking era starts and finishes?
So, I suspect, because I think that's when we call it in Denmark, that it's like 700-something, because that's when we had Gorm the Old, that's when he basically founded the Kingdom of Denmark. I think that's 700s, end of 700s, I forgot exactly what year, 90-something, 70-something, I don't know. And then I would argue that it lasts on... Oh, shit. Here, I don't have a complete answer. I would say 1100, maybe? 1200? Something around that? Maybe 1200?
Oh, you're pretty close. So, there's probably more than one answer for this, actually. So, if you look up in Anglo history textbooks when the Viking era is, there is a specific start date and finish date, and it's the 8th of June, 793 AD, to the 25th of September, 1066, which is weirdly specific, but the reason is because that's the Viking era in Anglo histories, because 793 is the raid on Lindisfarne, and the end, 25th of September 1066, is the Battle of Stamford Bridge, which is sort of the last great Viking raid on England, but that's such an Anglo-centric view of Norse history. So basically, on a more Norse-centric level, 8th century through to the 11th century, bang on. I find it really funny how Anglo history textbooks sort of use a specific date as though all the Norse got together one day and were like, man, we have to quit this raiding business. So within the English and the French speaking world, Vikings are primarily remembered as bloodthirsty pirates and raiders who cut a burning swath through the center of Europe. How do modern Danish people feel about this pirate reputation?
I think, I remember, if I look at right now, my perception of Vikings, so I'll just reflect on myself for a second, and then I'll talk about how I think it might be generally reflected. I think of Vikings as raping and pillaging lunatics. Like, it's not something I'm particularly proud of. It's a weird heritage to be like, yeah, Vikings. Like, raping is cool. Like, pillaging is cool. It's not. So... But it's a...
No. Two perceptions hot take right there. Raping and pillaging is not cool.
Maybe you have a different perception, but let me just... You're wrong. If you do, let's just straight up be out there. You're wrong. There's not two perceptions on this one. Anyway, But I think in general, like when I was younger and kind of glorified violence more than I do now, I think maybe in general in society, like proud of being like Viking heritage, because that was like kind of the superpower of Europe. Like we want to say the world, but let's be honest, no one fucking cared about the Vikings besides Europe. So I think like we were something proud, like, you know, superpower, power. We had something to say in the world stage, just like, again, in Europe, in the Vikings. So I think it's something that's generally perceived as a positive thing. So at least we use the Viking heritage a lot in Denmark for tourism and also as a feeling of pride, I suppose, which is just something I find like, because I used to do that. I find it messed up because of what it actually did. I have an anecdote to tell about the ridiculousness of Vikings and the level. Well, no, I shouldn't do that. It's just interesting. I think that's.
No, no, go on. I want to hear it.
Okay, so it's not as much in. It is a real like something that's real. So it's not a personal anecdote. It's from story, and for me, it just portrays how absolutely stupid the Vikings were. And it's not so much about raping and pillaging as it's just idiotic. But there was basically so. In you had I think it was called Constantine. It was Constantinople at the time. You had Hagia Sophia, which is this now mosque. It was a beautiful, like originally made as a church, that, you know, is like a world wonder for reasons. I've seen it. It's very beautiful. And on the second floor of when I went there with a friend, on the second floor of that, there was inscribed.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, inscribed on the, like, what do you call that, stone-like fence that you can stand and look down, like, onto the center of the church mosque into.
Yep.
And then, essentially, it's there's, like, something in stone that basically baffled, I think it was for hundreds of years, maybe this is a myth, but for a long time, that baffled people, like, because it wasn't... It wasn't Catholic, it wasn't Arabic, it wasn't anything. No one knew what this like character was. No one understood what it was. So it was baffled like people for centuries. Until one day, I don't know what the story is of how it was discovered, but someone realized that, oh, that's Nordic runes. And then they translated it. And essentially, all it says was, Halfdan was here. It's just the fucking equivalent of these memesters that we have today that just go on and just in a... stone building just right Halfdan was here. It's like, you know, completely disregard of like the beauty and like maintaining of it. It's just like, oh, I'll fucking put my name in because I'm bored about what's going on, so I'm just gonna scratch my name into this stone surface.
I love ancient graffiti because it just shows that like every generation is exactly as stupid as the previous generation, going back to the beginning of human history.
Yep. I completely agree. But yeah, that's how I view Vikings. It's like people who were slightly confused and went everywhere and just did random shit.
Yes, well, that's so the guys who the reason that inscription there is there is because there was a group of Norse mercenaries called the Varangian Guard who became like Varangian Guard who became the sort
I have
of
no idea.
The bodyguard of the Byzantine emperors. And that does really reinforce the whole, you know, the idea of Norse and Vikings and as being these like unbelievable ferocious warriors. And the Vikings did engage in some like spectacular raiding around Europe and did have like quite a reputation as ferocious warriors. But, you know, despite this, we do know that the majority of Viking, like literally the word Viking, was trading. And you're the one who actually taught me this. And, like, this is something that Norse historians have been trying to, like, get people to pay attention to for years now, because the Vikings were prodigious traders. Their trade ships went as far as the Middle East and North Africa, and you have Indian artifacts and Middle Eastern artifacts finding their way into Viking burial sites, which is incredible. Like, the majority of Viking was trade. And the weird thing is this is a period of... this period, the Viking period, 8th to the 12th century, is a really chaotic period. So you have, like, the Saxons, they conquered Europe. The Saxons conquered England and are raiding all across northern Europe. They conquer England and Transylvania. The Franks are also running rampant across France and Germany. The Picts are busy raiding north of England as well. Eastern Europe is just, like, an all-out battle zone for, you know, hundreds of years. So this is a period where there's a massive power vacuum in the middle of Europe and... so many people are trying to fill it. And the Norse did their share of slaughtering and some enslaving, but there's no real evidence that the Vikings were any worse or more brutal than anyone else at this time. So, can you guess where, like, the Viking reputation for, like, brutality and raiding comes from?
Ah, it is a good question. I'm actually not sure. I don't think I can guess that. Maybe it's the raids in England. We're also pretty barbaric in the East, like Lithuania and those countries. But I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yes, the Vikings were massive dicks to Greenland and Iceland.
That too.
So there's two trains of thought around where the Viking, like, because today, if you say Viking, you mean raiding. Like, no one really uses the term Viking for trading except history nerds. So there's basically two trains of thought as to why the Norse reputation has, the Viking reputation has gotten the way it has. So the first idea is that the Norse, basically, because they got around so much, because everyone else was sort of fighting and raiding in their own little localities, like the Franks fought and raided in northern France and northern Germany, you know, the Saxons were just in East Germany. Everyone was just in their own little microcosms, whereas the Norse were literally everywhere, so they wound up in everyone's stories. My favorite Norse raid of all time, by the way, is have you heard of the raid of Hastin and Bjorn Ironside?
No, I don't think I have.
The raid on Rome?
No, maybe it sounds familiar, but I don't think I have. I'd love to hear it.
Best story ever. Okay, so these two brothers, Hastin and Bjorn Ironside, they set out with a small fleet to raid Moorish Spain, but immediately leave Moorish Spain because the Moors fight back. And they're like, man, this is too fucking hard, we've got to get out of here. So they go for the easier goal of sacking Rome. So they come up with this brilliant strategy where they pretend Hastin has been killed and they request a Christian burial. And they turn up at Rome and they go to the bishop and they present his body. And the bishop says, all right, you can come into town and we'll bury him. So the Vikings are allowed into town, and when the procession enters the walls, Hastin leaps out of the coffin and throws open the gates, and the Vikings storm in and they seize the city. And it's not Rome. They're in a small mining city called Luni to the north of Rome. And the bishop has to, like, tap them on the shoulder and go, it's not Rome. Which, that's just my favourite story of all time. And then they kill everyone in town and enslave the rest, so less chill after that, but
so they basically did a Trojan horse kind of thing.
Yeah. Anyway, where was I about this idea? Yes. So there's the idea that because the Norse get around so much, basically they were raiding and trading all over Europe. So they build this reputation in so many different cultures that it sort of like comes together to form this much bigger, more important story. There's another idea though, which is that it's propaganda, that it comes out of Catholic propaganda. Because in the between the sort of the 8th and the 10th century, Catholicism is spreading into Northern Europe, and one of the areas they're really having trouble getting into is Scandinavia and Eastern Europe. So until Harold Bluetooth converts to Catholicism in the 10th century, and then sort of not long after that, I think 50 years after that, is when the quote-unquote Viking era comes to an end. Well, prior to that is the period where you basically have pagan Vikings. So one school of thought is that the Viking reputation for raiding is sort of stoked up by the Catholics to destroy their trade routes.
But how did they stoke them to do their trading routes? If you know, I'm just interested.
So spreading these stories of brutality of the Norse would have then damaged their vital trading routes and sort of really pushed the existing North leaders to convert to Christianity. Priests had like an incredibly important role in towns and cities. And you know, when you think about how vital trade was for the Norse, it's similarly, of course, the Catholics were pretty pissed off by things like the raids on Lindisfarne, that basically all our written records from this period come from priests, come from the Catholic Church. So it might also be that the Catholic Church sort of hypes this stuff up because it was what was important to them. But also, if the Catholic Church wanted to attack the Norse, one way would be to basically go into the towns and villages where Norse traded and be like, the Norse are barbaric raiders, don't trade with them. If you see a Norse ship, go get the army. Because then people would have been too afraid to trade with the Norse. Which would have also like created a feedback loop where if the Norse couldn't access their traditional trade routes, it might have turned more Norse people to raiding and helped like reinforce this this idea of them.
Okay, what was the benefit? No, it's because they wanted to convert them to Christianity, to get armies to go in there?
Yeah, to basically extend the power of Christianity. This is a period where, like, the church is doing some pretty pretty underhanded things to extend the reach of Christianity.
That is what the church is known for. Sorry, go on.
No, church is, the church can be pretty fucked up when it wants to be. So the North myth kind of comes to an end after Harold Bluetooth, at least in Anglo culture. And other than like the Lindisfarne raids, the Norse aren't particularly noteworthy within the British imagination until the 19th century. So, now I know you know a lot about this because, again, you're the one that taught me, but what can you tell me about, like, how do you think Danes are thought of in pop culture regarding, like, stereotypical masculinity?
So how Danish people are, how they consider masculinity, or how other people would consider Danish people's masculinity?
So let's start with how do you think, like, Danish people would consider like Vikings and masculinity?
That's a good question. I think it's a change that's occurring now. At least for myself, it's occurred how I view masculinity. But probably for majority of the Danes, it will be. I don't know if I know this. Like you said, like, oh, you know a lot about this. I'm not sure that's the case. If I told you something, it's probably been my mistake more than intentional. I think the average Danish person would probably consider themselves, would consider Vikings, not themselves, consider Vikings to be masculine. And it's like, yeah, I have a hard time justifying why, because I'm like, all the arguments is like, yeah. I guess, I don't know. I honestly don't know why. Like, it's just.
So is the Danish idea of like stereotypical masculinity similar to the Anglo idea of stereotypical masculinity, like unwashed, unrefined, spitting in the dirt, you know, getting into all the fights, dirty, rough and tough, rough and tumble?
Yeah, probably like manly, that, you know, I don't know. Yeah, probably something like that. And taking what's theirs, I don't know, like protecting yourself. I think it's just a typical masculinity.
So beyond Denmark, how do you think Vikings are represented as a whole in pop culture, sort of internationally?
Oh, I hate it so much. Like, I think it's the reason why I have a really big problem with Minnesota. No, I don't have a problem with Minnesota as such, but the American football team
fucking
and how Minnesota has just taken Vikings and made it like, oh, Minnesota Vikings, and then they're like making this whole image, and they're just like, it's just taking this image of a historical episode that actually has like significance, and then just completely misdoing it. We're like, oh, they had horns. Oh, Vikings are this and that. Or, you know, it's just like, oh, fuck. So I think in general, like, that there's a lot of misconceptions about Vikings. And especially, I think they always put, like, they're perceived as more heroic than they were. Like, you know, it's like, people saying, like, samurais are cool. Like, you know, we have all these, like, general, and then samurais weren't cool. They're just fucking warriors misusing the peasant class. Like, and the same principle with Vikings. I guess Vikings were just peasant to, like, I'm not going to farm anymore. I'm going to go somewhere and, you know, either do trade, which was most of it, or kill some people. And it's just, but mostly what's portraying in myth is that they were warriors, were specifically, especially, like, you know, everyone loved the series Vikings. I only watched first episode, and I really got frustrated with it just because the scenery is just like, it's just like, oh, this is what Vikings are. It's like, that's not even close to what Vikings are. Well, they do have some things, right?
I like the first season, kind of.
I watched the first season, and then I stopped after that. What I disliked about it is that they're trying to portray, you know, like the scenery is like, yeah, there's a lot of mountains and that, but like you're trying to portray Ragnar Lodbro, if you wanted the correct pronunciation. And he was a Dane. And I can tell you there were no fucking mountains or fjords in Denmark at all. So fuck.
I remember when you first told me about that, when we were talking about the show a few years ago, and you were like, don't you see the problem? Mountains! And I was like, no. And I've been to Denmark like half a dozen times, and you were like, there's no fucking mountains in Denmark! I was like, oh, right.
Yeah, but I guess it would also be boring, because there's not the... You know, it's like, it's these rough environment, you know, it's like mountains and fjords, and that's how it's portrayed, and reality is just... She's flat, like the Danish, I don't know, I guess it's not very fit to how the Viking myth is told, like, and yeah, I don't know.
No, generally the Viking myth sort of focuses more on Norway.
Yeah.
The sweeping fjords of Norway.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, it's funny. Vikings is a really good example of like it's presented itself as the more realistic interpretation of Vikings because it doesn't have horned helmets and it doesn't have sort of like big blonde beards and whatnot. And yet, by like steering into that like dirty masculine Viking image, they've just they're still like it's still an absolutely ridiculous like myth laden representation of Vikings just without the horned helmets. So, do you know where? Like all these like ideas of Vikings come from, like the horned helmets and the unrefined masculinity and all of this jazz.
I don't know. I do know there was horned helmets in like used in Viking culture, but they were purely ceremonial and they were like you didn't have multiple. There was like one or very few. That I know, but I don't know how it got like put into it. Like you had to wear the horns.
So it all comes from weirdly German opera. So Germans. Fucking loved the Vikings. I should probably stop swearing because it didn't occur to me that we'll have to put this on explicit with the podcast. And they became a real staple of early German nationalism because they were these symbols of rugged manliness and tradition, which sort of became this weird mishmash of German and Nordic culture mixed with like poets' imagination. So obviously completely fictional. These 19th century German nationalists, they got their information where they got their information from was from a series of histories written about the Vikings by Swedish and Norwegian historians in the 18th century, which were based on Icelandic sagas, which had been brought to the country from Iceland, sort of over the 17th and 18th century. So now we're finally onto the Viking sagas, because the Viking sagas are amazing. Now, you mentioned sagas at the beginning of the episode a little bit. Do you know who wrote them?
Yes, it wasn't the Vikings, because the Vikings didn't write shit down. A lot of the sagas that I've heard was actually written by... I think that's one of the... What I know, which is... But one of the things I find interesting about the Viking period is that most of the history about Vikings is written by... Not by the Vikings, but by everyone else. Especially the raids. There's actually, I think it's one of the only occurrences in history where the history is... You know, history... You always have the... History is always written from the winner's perspective. But the Vikings is not that. Because even when they won, it was written by the... Like, the losers would reflect, like, on the Vikings. So to speak. It's an interesting period of history. So Christianity had a huge hand in documenting a lot of what happened. But in terms of the sagas, I'm actually not sure who collected that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so it's the sagas are really interesting. You're absolutely right. It wasn't the Vikings. The Vikings really didn't have very much access to paper, so the Viking sagas were mostly oral stories, and unfortunately, most of those oral stories got lost, except in Iceland. So around the 12 to 1300s, monks in Iceland started writing up the oral stories of the island, which included the Norse sagas. And that's where we basically get all of the original Norse sagas from 12th and 13th century monks who lived, you know, 100 to 200 years after the periods they were writing about. And one of the weird things about this is that for a long time, and these 18th and 17th century histories that were written by Swedish and Norwegian historians, they got these Icelandic sagas and they brought them back to Scandinavia, and they thought they were 100% true. They thought, you know, oh, these are the official histories of the Vikings. So they wrote about the sagas based on these writings verbatim. They were just like, oh, this is fact. Modern studies of these sagas has shown that has found that the monks probably inserted a lot of like modern ideas into the sagas, because especially through references to clothes, weirdly. There's a lot of references to clothes that wouldn't have existed during the Norse period. So we know the monks sort of heavily altered the stories, but we don't know how much, because locals also might have altered the stories themselves. And one of my favorite, like, factoids about the sagas is on morality stories. Have you heard of, let me just check his name. What was it? Audun? Audun and the Polar Bear?
I don't think I have.
It's a great story. It's basically this guy who goes to Greenland, buys a polar bear, and he wants to give it to the King of Denmark. So he goes through some adventures, finds himself in Norway, finally gives the polar bear to the King of Denmark. The king rewards him richly. He goes on a pilgrimage. He winds up back in Iceland, rich and famous. So it's like a classic, like, give to others and you will receive back onto you. The reason it's a notable saga story is because it's one of the only saga stories which has a positive message for giving to others. Apparently, the vast majority of saga stories in which someone sort of like gives away their things with no expectation of getting it back, the saga takes the morality that they get punished for their selflessness. And I love that the Viking sagas, especially the Icelandic sagas, are like, don't be a chump. Chumps die.
I think that's actually what I really find interesting as well. This actually, I remember when Thor first came out, I was so frustrated by how, like, and I'm talking about Marvel, how Marvel has chosen to depict Nordic mythology. And of course, it's fiction and they're doing it for comics, so it's not the same, but it's just so unbelievably inaccurate that it hurts me. But it's because Thor, everyone is like, Thor is a beautiful man with blonde hair and is super nice. And like, no. Thor was a fucking psychopath with red hair. He was so angry.
Yeah, Thor was
so
awful.
Like all. But that's the thing. That's what I like in Nordic mythology. You know, we tend to view it as when you don't haven't studied, like, read more about it, studied the issue. It's that the gods were like the greatest, and you know they're good and did the right things. The gods were fucking assholes. They did things for themselves. Like, you know, they would trick. They would act, like Odin would trick warriors, like the great warriors, into, you know, taking on deals with him. And he will always end up killing them in like either like horrific way where they lose everything because he needed them for the army to fight against Ragnarok. And then you're like, oh, but he's doing it to avoid Ragnarok. No, like humanity's gonna die. He doesn't care. He just wants to save his own life. And
yeah. Well, the final stories of Ragnarok are basically that the death of everyone and everything is inevitable. And it makes a lot of sense that the gods are assholes in Norse mythology, because if you lived in a really harsh world where people died arbitrarily, then yeah, you'd make your gods assholes.
But I just find it like it's also just that the gods are so crazy now. They just do the crazy. I forgot which story it was, but there is it's just such a messed up, like they're like brothers from a farm who are like, I think they're out bathing, and then two of them turns into ferrets. Don't ask me how two people can turn themselves into ferrets. But apparently that's the thing they can, and they're bathing. And then there's two brothers, like Loki and Thor and Odin comes along walking. And they're like, they see them. And Loki's like, hey, I'm going to kill them. And he just kills the two ferrets. They don't know it's human, I think they just kill them for fun. They literally just kill them for fun. That's it. That's like the story. And there's no more to it than them killing them for fun. And then they go to the farm where their brothers belong to with the father. And the father recognizes the ferret as the brothers. So they lock in the gods. You have to give us this and this else. And no, these are not like giants. These are just humans. Just like they're not, in this story, it's not human. It's not giants. It's humans that are having this, where humans just lock them in a shed. And
well, there's also a lot of stories with the giants where they're just massive dicks to the giants. Like the giants are just minding their business. And then Thor's like, yep, I'm gonna go fucking kill these guys. And just goes and murders a bunch of people who are minding their own business.
That's most of the stories, is that like the also most of their problems, like Fenris, like the wolf that it will basically bring about the end of the world, is created by the gods. And because the way that, you know, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I forgot, it's Loki has sex with something. He's basically being Zeus, like, and then he gives birth to this massive
yes
wolf.
I think Fenris is the son of a frost giant that Loki has an affair
yeah,
with.
Yeah, that sounds very probable. And then they're like because Odin knows the prophecy, he chooses to lock it up and like fucking treat it horrendously, which is why it ends up wanting to kill everyone, is because they're
Although Fenris does in Ragnarok, Fenris gets his revenge, which is that the last thing Odin sees is the jaws of Fenris closing around his head, which is a fucking metal line for your apocalypse.
It is. But yeah, there's just so many, like most of the stories, very few of them are like good or nice. They're all just, yeah.
Oh, so an interesting like aside there is that part of the reason why a lot of the stories, now obviously a lot of the mythology does get passed down because people sort of, the Norse are very independent of the Catholic Church and pass their stories down a bit. But some of that like negativity and that like harshness of the Nords would be influenced by Icelandic tales, because Iceland was a much harsher place to live than the rest of Scandinavia. Like, Iceland was brutal to live in. People were just constantly dying in Iceland. So a lot of our modern interpretation of Vikings might come from how harsh living conditions in Iceland were.
That would make a lot of sense. And I think, without having any sort of proof or backup for this, I actually think the Icelandic language is closer to how Norse would have sounded than Danish, Norwegian, Swedish is today.
I have no idea on that actually, but that sounds like something that would be plausible.
Yeah. Again, no idea. I'm just guessing. This is a theory I've completely made up myself. There's no basis in reality or science or anything.
Yeah, that's something that would be interesting to look into. I wonder if Icelandic is more related to ancient Norse. But anyway, back to what we were talking about. So basically, what we have is the 21st century, because we were sort of on the trail of where the image of Vikings comes from. And basically, what we've come to is that our modern conception of Vikings, our 21st century pop culture image of Vikings, comes from 19th century German opera, which itself got its image from 18th century Scandinavian studies of 12th century monk manuscripts that were based off oral stories. But do you know who was telling the stories before the monks were writing them down?
No, I do not. Like, we're going into a rabbit hole I'm not familiar with, so please.
So this one is, I'm glad you don't know the answer to this one, because it's really interesting. Now, we don't know it for certain, but there's a high probability it was women. The people telling the stories in Iceland was women. Now, there's two reasons it's kind of notable for that. It's because in Norse tradition, men told the stories. Men were the storytellers. But in Gaelic tradition, women were the storytellers. And Iceland was really heavily settled by Irish women. Because, you know, slavery. But it adds an extra layer of confusion, because those 12th century monk stories are based off oral stories that are either in part or in whole being told by women of Gaelic descent who might have brought Gaelic culture into Norse culture, into 12th century, not 12th century, sorry, into like 10th century and earlier Icelandic culture, which wouldn't have been shared with the rest of Scandinavia. So there might actually be modern Gaelic influences on our conception of Vikings, which didn't exist in the rest of Scandinavia. Isn't that cool?
It is. It's crazy. It's just, I think it's just the history for you, right? It's also knowing your sources, where things come from. It's just like, huh, is this really a true perception of how like that was? Probably not, but it's best we have.
Yeah, it's so annoying. It's one of those things where it's something I find interesting when you look up people talking about, did women tell the Norse sagas? There's like a bit of debate in it, and some historians have tried to figure out, like, do the Norse sagas sound like they're from a female perspective, which is kind of a weird thing to like try and figure out. And there's never really going to be an answer to this. But the thing I find interesting is that a lot of historians just sort of, it's considered like a niche idea that women might have told the stories. But it's not like, we also don't have confirmation that it was men telling the stories. So it's one of those things where through history, we default to assuming men do everything. And that if you want to claim that a woman did something, you have to really bend over backwards to prove it.
That's history. And, which, yeah.
History is dick to women a lot of the time.
Most of the time.
And yeah, most of the time. So we've talked a little bit about this before, but although I'm starting to think that maybe I'm misremembering some of our previous conversations, but I know you know a little bit about this. So do you want to tell the audience a little bit about women's role in Norse culture? Because that's something that often gets ignored.
Okay. So what I know, which is apparently based on German opera and whatever, you know, that whole thing. So is it really valid? But what I know is that I think it's also, that's actually something that probably Danish people would pride themselves in, is I think that women actually had more rights in Viking culture than most other cultures, in the sense that I have only known stories, so I haven't actually read anything specific, because I say that, but then I also read some Viking stories where it's like, that's not the case at all. But the one story I've known, which I actually think is from a Danish comedian, is that women were allowed to speak in like gatherings that I now forgot the name of, which annoys me. Everyone was, the only criteria was that you had to stand on one leg after you, like first time you were fine, but after you had to stand on one leg because people would get drunk. I don't know if this is actually true, if this is a myth that was told by... because it's not based on a historical source.
That sounds awesome. I want that to be true.
But I think women had more of a say But I am not sure. Like, I am genuinely not sure, because I just might just be...
Yeah, they did. They Norse culture had, like, incredible women's rights. Although, again, it does just occur to me, this is total conjecture on my part, but it occurs to me that because of how much information about the Norse culture we get from Iceland, and Iceland has very progressive women's rights and has for a long time, I wonder if some of Scandinavia's women's rights comes from, actually comes from, like, historical, Scandinavia's historical women's rights comes from Iceland's. But that's aside from the point. Anyway, we do know, so because Iceland laws generally came from the Scandinavian laws, which settled in the area, that women had really extensive rights. For instance, women handled finances, which wasn't like today the sort of, oh, the woman handles the home type thing is like, it's a really patronizing and stupid thing to say. Whereas like back in the day, because women handled the finances, it meant that, like, women legally had control of all the money in the household, and it also meant that, like, women, like, paid their husbands allowances. And also, because if men had to go out, like, trading or something, and the woman was at home with all your money, if she wanted to, like, fuck you up, she could fuck you up. She could just take all your money and hide it if she wanted to, which gave women, like, an incredible amount of power in society. They also had, like, incredibly liberal divorce laws, so, they didn't have no-fault divorce, but they had, like, a huge range of reasons why people could get divorced, including one which is really weird. If a man was found wearing his wife's clothes, they could get divorced. So that's just shared in, like, a little snippet of a saga. But some historians think that that might actually have been, like, a code word for no-fault divorce. That basically, if a couple wanted to get divorced and they didn't have a reason for it, the woman could basically just be like, oh, yeah, I caught him wearing my clothes, and, you know, bam, divorced. But, yeah, and obviously, shield maidens. Shield maidens were something that was debated for a long time, basically women warriors. And for a long time, it was thought of that shield maidens were like Amazons. They were mythical or made up. But so many graves have been dug up with women's skeletons in them, with full warrior burials, with weapons next to them, with, like, engravings on the headstones, with, like, warrior engravings on the headstones. So it's almost definite that there were shield maidens, even if they weren't that common. Obviously, the Norse weren't perfect. Like, they did have some, like, this is 1,000 years ago, they had some antiquated ideas about women. But there are so many fascinating facts about Norse life that pop culture has just completely forgotten. Like, for instance, the Norse all probably wore massive knitted sweaters and scarves. There's also an amazing letter from an English priest where he warns that Vikings are stealing women, but not forcefully, but because they're clean and polite. It's basically like, be careful of those Norse Vikings stealing your women by being polite to them and smelling good. Because there's that whole thing about, like, Vikings, before they went out Viking anytime, they bathed copiously, and then they combed their hair, and they tied braids in it, and they wore flowers, and they were really fastidious about being clean, and dyed their hair. The Vikings loved dyeing their hair.
Huh.
But I love how, like, clean the Vikings are compared to, like, their modern image. Like, the show Vikings shows how, like, it tries to be realistic by showing how, like, grimy and dirty and yeah, they are. But, like, everything we know about the Norse is that they were probably... they probably looked like a bunch of, like, hipster baristas. Just everything we imagine about Vikings today is wrong. From, like, the idea of them being these huge fur-clad maniacs. Fur and cloth were expensive. So the Norse wore knitted clothing and felt. And it was bright. It wasn't, like, all the dull greys and whatnot. They would have worn, like, bright reds and yellows and blues. So my next question was supposed to be, can you guess what the dominant hair color was back then? But I think I just gave that away.
You did, but I already forgot what you said.
So the dominant hair color, we would, like, today we would generally think it would be blonde, you know, the blonde Vikings.
I was red, if it was dead.
But, like, modern DNA tests of Scandinavians from the 6th to the 8th century suggest that the dominant hair color was probably brown or black. Because there was a big influx of Southern Europeans and West Asians into Scandinavia around the 6th and 8th century. But yeah, the Vikings loved dyeing their hair blonde.
Huh. Yeah, I thought it was actually that they had red, that we had more red-haired people in Vikings.
No, I think, where did red hair come from? I'm pretty sure red hair comes from the Scots, doesn't it?
No, but that's, so what I actually don't have any, I remember having a conversation, I think it was with my sister about this. I'm not sure what it's based on, like what historical theory, but there is, I don't know if it's even a theory or if it's fact, but I can tell you the idea. The idea is that most, like blonde would primarily be Swedish. I don't know if it's of origin, but at least in the Nordics here. And then so there was a migration from Sweden to Denmark and from Denmark to Scotland and Ireland. Particularly because we had, you know, the Vikings, what they did is when they also went somewhere, some of them would go back, but someone would always be like, we like it here. So they're just going to stay and live there. Which is, they're also like, I don't want to fuck the king at home. I'm going to make my own kingdom here. They did that a lot. And essentially there was this like mass migration sort of because of that. And most of the red hair would then have been in Denmark that migrated to Scotland and Ireland, whereas the blonde would then have come from Sweden into Denmark. Because we do have a lot of blonde people today. Myself, I have actually have a, well, it's not red, but I have a bronze coloring of my beard, especially apparent in sunlight.
Mm.
So it, there is a...
Yeah, that's sort of ruddy, that sort of ruddy brown that sort of goes a bit orange in the sunlight.
Yeah.
So apparently there's some historical debate about this, about whether red hair was brought by the Vikings or brought back by the Vikings.
Ah, okay.
Yes, I'll... Damn it, now I need to do research into that. But yes, the point is that the Vikings had like a big range of hair colours, and obviously today Norse people aren't all black-haired. But from what we've seen from like DNA evidence, it suggests that a lot of people probably had had darker coloured hair. And we also know that, we do know that the Vikings did love dyeing their hair. Like blonde was very fashionable. And what they'd do is they'd soak it in lye, which would also pretty much destroy your hair and possibly give you chemical burns. But yeah, so it was a fashion thing. So along with like wearing big knitted sweaters and perfumes and combing their beards and braiding their hair, the Vikings also dyed their hair. Like they were super vain about their looks. Basically, I reckon if you brought a Viking to today, they would just be like, they would look like the stereotypical chai latte swilling, sweater wearing Nancy boys of like ultra-nationalist nightmares. So, we've done like a quick crash course on Viking history, on some of the bigger myths about Vikings. Was there anything that surprised you in what we just talked about?
There was a few things. Like the one that surprised me the most was the whole idea on like where it came from, right? I didn't know that it wasn't documented by the Vikings, but I did not know that it was primarily in Ireland. I did not know it was 200 years after, which it does make sense though, because like, unfortunately, that's normally when history is recorded. It's after the fact, which also makes sense, because how you can record it meanwhile. And then also the Gaelic women in that apparently was retelling the stories and the influence of that. I think that's what surprised me the most. Honestly, that's most things. Everything else, I'm like, yeah, that sounds right. I think one problem I can have with the, when you talk about, like, when one mentions that there were women, better women's rights, you know, consider that it's a, you know, it's not better women's rights than today. Well, probably in some countries.
No, probably not.
But it's still, it's you know, it's like putting it up on a pedestal. Like, this was, you know, it's better, and it's just, yeah. I don't know. From what I know about it, I wouldn't say that it was like a great culture, so to speak.
No, well, the Irish women in Iceland came there. Some of them might have come willingly, but we also know a fair number of them probably didn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have that letter from the English basically talking about how the Vikings are seducing their women. But at the same time, like, those Ironside brothers, they did enslave an entire town for the crime of not being Rome. So there was a strong mix in Norse culture. Like there is a habit where we sort of try to say like this whole area was like this or this whole area was like that. Whereas prior to the 11th century, during the Viking period, the Norse regions were very independent. Even though there were kings and whatnot, pretty much every town operated like its own private kingdom and just occasionally paid tribute to some guy who was miles away. And so all the trading and raiding, you know, one town might fully trade and another town might fully raid. It was all sort of dependent on where you lived, who you were, what your trade prospects were. Some places were great, some places were terrible. The part that I found really interesting researching this was the Gaelic women, to be honest. The Gaelic women might play a major part in how we remember the Vikings today. Was fascinating. I thought that was really interesting, and it really frustrated me that there's not an answer to it. But the thing that I think most people, if I wanted there to be like a more nuanced understanding of the Norse, I reckon it's the idea of unrefined masculinity. That today a lot of ultranationalist groups have like co-opted Vikings into their imagery of the idea of like the unrefined, brutal Norse, you know, with their swords and Norse energy and Viking energy. And I don't know what accent I'm trying to do there, but you know what I mean. And I just, because I think it's so funny that like this, that people are trying to co-opt the Norse into like unrefined unrefined masculinity when the Norse were so vain. Like, so many Norse fucking loved fashion. They loved fashion, and they wore like really bright colored shirts, and they wore perfumes, and they braided their hair. And I wish that was more presented in images of Norse, of them like fussing about their looks and just being normal people.
Yeah, I do think also like one thing which tend to make sense, right? We tend to see it as a group, like the Norse. We got to remember it was still individuals. So there were definitely, you know, the rugged as well as there were the other one, right? It's just we always prefer seeing, oh, this group of people in history portrayed these values. And like, it's never that simple. It's, individuals within a group have different values than the group. And that's always how it is.
Yeah, there definitely would have been gross, unwashed people who probably spat on the ground like, yeah, damn sissies. But, you know, from what we know, the majority of Norse warriors and society was pretty, like, cool with fashion. They liked it.
Yeah.
So this episode is supposed to act as, like, a lead-in to our talk about, like, preconceived beliefs. So these beliefs of ours around the Vikings, like, why do you think that the Vikings have become such a mainstay of, like, this ultra-masculine culture and of ultra-nationalist culture?
Well, I think there's a lot of different answers to that. Probably because of several reasons, right? So there was, like, not all Norse history, so maybe sagas was, but not all Norse history was recorded in Icelandic, right? It was a lot by the Christians, which makes them come out as very rough because they lost, right? So you want them to seem like an enemy, the Norse people, which makes sense because, you know, also when someone comes and rapes and pillages you, then of course you're not going to portray that in a positive light. But that wasn't always the case, right? Sometimes it was also them going in and trying to fucking them over, and then still portraying them in the negative light, right? So it might have all the way from back then have an influence. I think it also just comes down to this. You want to kind of portray this as like a noble people where they have this ruggedness and, you know, the tough, you know, tough love kind of thing. And, you know, even though they're headed rough, then they still manage to do this and that and la la la, you know. But I think actually mainly it also becomes a marketing scheme, right? Because American football is a very rough sport. And I think it's like Minnesota Vikings, because surely like people from Minnesota, they're very proud of like the Viking and like that aspect, right? Where they don't really know anything about it. They just hear it from the marketing aspect from the American football team that they cheer for, which, you know, nothing wrong with that. It's just incorrect portrayals.
I wonder if part of the Wisconsin thing is Minnesota thing is because there was a lot of Scandinavian migration into that area, it was basically people trying to maintain the historical culture. So each generation would have sort of sensationalized it a little bit to try and keep that culture alive in the subsequent generations. Because I feel like the further removed you are from something, from like traditional culture, the more sometimes people will try to amp it up to compensate.
Yeah. Yeah, to be proud of it, to say like, oh yeah, my nationality, this is my heritage. I actually found, so I think it was yesterday, I saw a meme that I found really funny. That's like, oh, you know, all this, like, we all look ancestors, give me my ancestors. Like, we're always looking back to them to provide us how to live today. And I just loved, it said ancestors, give my answer. And then the second image was like a lizard. And it just, like, you know, because like, yeah, that's ancestors, you know, evolutionary. I don't want that to give me advice.
I hate appealing to past authority. The whole mythic past idea, it drives me insane.
Same. And I think that's also what you're trying to do here, right? It's like, oh yeah, you know, well, would your ancestors be proud? Like, seriously, probably some of my ancestors were Nazis, so fuck them. Like, I don't... And like, you know.
Yeah, some of your ancestors were jerks.
Exactly. Like,
hot take today. People in the past were assholes.
Yeah.
Some of them.
And, you know, did horrible things that are just not acceptable. And all that. And, you know, it's also like, yeah, family is thicker than blood. Yeah, but what if my family is not nice? Like, it's not thicker than blood.
The reason I wanted to talk about the Norse is because you're, like, you're obviously Danish. Again, sorry. You're obviously Danish. You're, like, you've grown up with Danish culture. Obviously, the Vikings are a major part of Danish culture because it's, you know, it was the center of Viking, it was one of the centers of Viking kingdoms, which means that there's going to be a lot of, like, preconditioned social beliefs around Norse culture. Like, every country always mythologizes their own history a little bit. So, where do you think you're, like, what do you think society is trying to precondition you to believe in relation to Norse history?
That's a good idea. I don't know. And I'm thinking, like, were I raised that much with Viking culture? We had some history and we did learn about Vikings, and we have these, like, we do have medieval, well, they're called medieval fairs, but they're basically Viking fairs around, like, Denmark, where you, we do that. And
I love medieval fairs.
What I think Christianity is more heavily, maybe it's just me for my family. I'm trying to think about how we might have been conditioned to believe about Vikings. I think it's trying to have this, like, proudness about it, Vikings, and also, you know, it's also seeing the great efforts of Eric the Red, like, know how we colonized, like, trying to put it in a positive light, you know, how actually the Vikings discovered America first. I think we're very adamant about that, maybe. Maybe it's just me who was adamant about that when I was young.
To be fair, it was pretty incredible.
It was, but then they left and it didn't matter. So, like, it's, who cares? Like, it's just some person going to another continent. And just to be fair, the Vikings didn't discover America. America was already there, and there were a whole, like, native people who lived there. So it's like, it's just this European extent, like, oh, you know, oh, Europe discovered them. No, they were always there. It's just, you didn't discover shit. Stop this crap about. I'm not sure. I think we definitely have to see it in a more positive light. We're taught about the bad things they did. Well, I was when I was in school, but I generally in history, I think it's not. I think the only one where we have, like, where you get portrayed about how negative something is we had about Martin Luther King, and I remember, you know, how horrible racism is. We also had about anti-Semitism, you know, the whole Nazis and all that. So we have, you know, Nazis are portrayed in a very bad light, but Vikings were not. They were part of, like, our history. I don't know if it's something to be proud of, because I think maybe it's just my young brain being really, like, admiring violence for some really weird thing. Weird. But I remember, like, someone mentioned that the first time you have an instance of, I think it's Denmark someone in a history book trying to take credit for inventing football or some crap, which was in England. But it was, like, Vikings who played.
Oh, so many places try to take credit for inventing football.
But I remember there was, like, something Vikings when they invaded sometime in England where they played with a severed head, like a ball, and passed it to each other.
I don't think that counts. Kicking around guy's severed head.
I remember that being. I wasn't saying that it meant football, but I remember there was something like that was a game that apparently some Vikings would play, which is really messed up. So I don't know if it's necessarily, like, because that is definitely not putting it in a. I don't know if that's necessarily in a good light.
That is grim. Can you imagine if you were a normal Viking? If you joined a Viking expedition and you were just, like, some normal guy who lived on a farm, just like someone like one of us, but who just, like, lived on a farm, and some guy was like, come Viking with me, and you got on the Viking boat, and then some guys you knew went and cut somebody's head off and was, like, kicking it around a field. Like, what would you do? You'd just be like, oh my god, what kind of fucking people am I around?
Yeah, but you also gotta remember how young you were at that, so you just, it would just be normalized, right? Because, like, Viking was not, it wasn't like people in their 20s, 30s, like that, it was people in, like, their teens, right? That was when, and then you had the older ones, was 25, or, you know, they died a lot earlier, and, like, being adult was a lot earlier as well. So, and I think there is when you're a teenager, that, like, you're so hormonal things, and I think there is a tendency to, like, violence is just something that is more prone to happen and glorified at that stage. I'm not sure why. There probably is an explanation, or maybe it's just me who was fucked up.
I suppose one of the things that I mean, sort of, is very universal around cultures is that there is a sort of preconditioned belief to accept violence, or sort of accept the value of violence.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. Like, I mean, it makes sense from a social point that you'd want your society to accept violence.
Yeah.
Not internally, but like if you need to, especially the more a society needs to externally project force, the more you would want to precondition your society to accept that violence and view it as necessary.
That's true. So if we look at it from a near realistic point of view, then it's also just, I would prefer if it was like, if, you know, no one, if they wanted to do violence, they would do violence, but on their own, and you wouldn't, you know, do violence to get what you wanted from other people. But at the same time, you know, like, if you just talk about nation states, then if all nation states abolished their military or had no military, then it would only take one nation or one small nation to put up a military, and then they would, you know, then they could like fuck over. They would basically take advantage of that fact, right? That's what we've seen earlier. It's like there would literally be warrior cultures.
Oh, I sometimes think about American culture because American culture is pretty hyper jingoistic and extremely nationalist. Even on like the progressive side of American culture, they're very America, like. Compared to most other European and Anglo cultures, they're very into themselves. But it's kind of an attitude that is necessary to have for an empire. And, like, America is an empire. And, like, an empire can't survive unless its population is actually behind it in its drives. Unless its people actually feel very self-confident and feel very, like, we are right and we need to push this. Like, you can't have an empire unless your people believe that. So sort of, it's inevitable that the cultures that become empires are going to be the most sort of intransigent, the most jingoistic.
Yeah, but is that limited to empires, or is that also part of just the nation? I feel like that's any bigger group, they need to have some shared values, and always becomes, you know, the always thing you can and cannot say, can and cannot do in a given culture.
And that is something that it will be very interesting to talk about when we do our extended episodes on preconditioned belief. But I think we have talked long enough today. This was supposed to be like a 10 to 20 minute episode, and it is now over an hour. But we have raised some very interesting points, and I'm very glad this went long, because we talked about some really interesting things, and we've raised a whole bunch of stuff to bring up in the later episodes. And I hope this worked as a little bit of a teaser to our preconditioned belief episodes. That is all we have time for today. Thank you for joining us. And I think we can all agree that the Danish are no different to than the Norwegians. Jonas?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. You should have said the Swedish, then it would have been more controversial.
And I think we can all agree that Danes and Swedes are essentially the same.
Well, I'm sure many people will be angered by that, but I, as an individual, do not believe in nation states anyway. So, have a nice evening.
Well, that was two perceptions, but this is still historical hysteria. Thank you for joining me. I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed making it. As always, feedback can be sent to historicalhysteria@gmail.com, and don't forget to check the socials, r/historicalhysteria on Reddit and @manichistory on Twitter. But before I leave, let me leave you with this. Scandinavia today refers to Denmark, Norway, and Sweden, but is often used for all Nordic countries, including Greenland, Iceland, and Finland. Though Scandinavia has been a culturally close area for well over a millennia, the idea and word Scandinavia were only popularized in the 18th century in part by Hans Christian Andersen. The word was derived from the southern province of Sweden, Skania, which had changed hands between Denmark and Sweden in the 17th century. Skania's name goes back to the Old Norse, Skani, and the word Scandinavia is thought to come from the Proto-Germanic word Skadinajo, meaning Skadia Island, because they thought it was an island at the time. And that came from a Latin word, which was Scandinavia. Oh. Well, that was a long way to go for nothing. Anyway, bye.